Why, hello and welcome. Welcome to the Peer Pressure Podcast. I am Diane, sometimes known as Diane Kamikaze, and I am your host. The reason why I do this podcast is because I like to say I am a champion of heavy music. I've always found my favorite songs since I was a young kid had riffs, hooks, were either metal, hardcore, hard rock, or punk, or something fairly aggressive in attitude and sound. And I am all about appreciating the people that keep that world going, whether they're musicians, webmasters, other podcasters, record label and festival owners. It's important to me to recognize what these people do in that realm of music. So, I am here to bring them to you in a different context, more than a Wikipedia entry or a press release, a little more personal and a lot more fun. I'm a rocker for life, and I hope these episodes do make a difference. Send me feedback at diane@wfmu.org, and my Facebook page is Diane Kamikaze Farris, Rocker for Life. Like my page there, and I will keep everybody updated on podcast episodes in that space. Thanks so much for listening, and stay tuned. Kevin Hufnagel is my guest today. He is a guitarist in Gorguts, in Dysrhythmia, Vora, and Sabbath Assembly. A busy guy. Check out his Instagram handle, K_Hufnagel. You can also look at KevinHufnagel.com. And he has a band camp under his name as well. Let's go. Kevin Hufnagel is here.
Hello.
How are you?
Great.
It's good to see you.
You too.
And thank you for coming to WFMU.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
He is here in person. And so you have so much going on. And the last time that I saw Kevin was actually overseas. And it was, we did get to speak, but initially I was at the Roadburn Fest, which most of the listeners know about. And I was up front for Sabbath Assembly and I'm taking pictures and I'm realizing, I'm like, oh, that's Kevin playing guitar there. Like, oh, so you're a very busy guy.
Yeah. I don't know. It's, yeah, I guess I am, but it doesn't feel like I'm as busy as I am. I don't know why that is.
Well, but maybe you just pop up in the right places. But
yeah.
How did the, this, and so are you in Sabbath Assembly or was that just a tour thing? Or?
Well, basically how that happened was about almost a year ago, Dave Nuss from Sabbath Assembly, he's kind of the mastermind of that band.
Mm-hmm.
He contacted Colin Marston, my bandmate, and wanted Colin to maybe play some guitar on their last record, and Colin couldn't do it, so he recommended me, so he put me in touch with Dave. And so I met Dave, and then shortly after that discovered he was in this band Anger Watt, like a long time ago in the 80s.
Oh,
they were
really?
On like Metal Blade. I was like, you're in that band?
Oh my God.
Which was pretty funny, and he was kind of, I think, surprised that I remembered them or whatever. But
wow.
Anyway, so we started talking about, I don't know, we kind of hit it off, you know, we started talking about old metal and stuff, you know, but but Sabbath Assembly is sort of like a dark folk acoustic thing, which I'm super into also. So So I played on one song on the Year of Gods records, which is the one that came out last year. And then that was fun. So then he had me back again. And then now I just played on the whole forthcoming release, which I guess will be out in the fall, which is pretty wild. It's going to be pretty, definitely their weirdest record, I think. It was pretty fun to make. And then, so then they had this tour coming up and he asked me if I wanted to do the tour. And I had the time and it sounded like fun. So I did it and it was a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So were you in on the writing process at all?
Well, the thing with that band is most of the material is based on these hymns from this cult called the Process Church of the Final Judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I know, or from what I've told, there aren't really any recordings of those hymns anywhere. But there's a book of them, you know, so there's sheet music for it. So Dave kind of picks these hymns and, you know, they're just chord charts and with melody lines and we just sort of reinterpret them, you know.
Mm.
And it's fun. It's a fun project for me to be involved in because he lets me have a lot of artistic freedom with you know, how I voice the chords or change the chords or,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's pretty open to, like, other people's ideas. And Jamie, the singer, is great, too, to work with. So pretty fun.
That must be a very interesting and a very different experience for you. I mean, working from sheet music and something that somebody else has written.
That is, yeah, true. Because usually I, with the other projects I have, you know, to varying degrees for the different bands, but usually I have a pretty, I tend to write a lot of material for all the other bands, you know. And not so much for that one, but it's still, you know, I still really enjoy it. Sometimes it's kind of nice not to, to already just be given something and then just get to have fun with it, you know, rather than always having to.
Well, sure, and they've trust you to put in, you know, your stamp, kind of your style, which is really great, and that says something about, you know, what how you are appreciated as a guitarist for sure and a writer. Mm. So then you do have Vora, which is current, and Dysrhythmia, which is current, and Gorguts.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I say that with a question mark, because I'm not sure what's going on with Gorguts, and I guess I'd like to ask you.
Yeah, everyone asks, and I don't blame them, because it's been kind of mysterious, I guess, because we have been working on material since 2008, and it's done.
Mm-hmm.
It's done. The record is done. It sounds great. I wish people could hear it right now, but they have to wait longer.
Do you know how long it's going
to
be?
I'm told, you know, I never like to say, because it just keeps getting delayed for one reason or another, but...
Right.
Finally, I mean, all the like major roadblocks I've been holding it up for the past couple of years have finally been lifted.
Okay.
So really, it should come out this fall, September, October.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and I think people will be surprised when they hear it. Still sounds like Gorguts, but it's definitely have some new elements to it. You know,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of new writing input. You know, still like bulk of the material is Luke's. You know, and.
Mm-hmm.
He's definitely the voice of that band, you know. He's great to work with too.
And how did you hook up with him?
It was crazy. Like I just got a MySpace message.
Oh wow! Okay.
Back in those days. Yeah, and I remember receiving it because I was Dysrhythmia was on tour at the time, and it was like 3 a.m. and we're staying at some kid's house in Kansas or something, and I just go check. Get online and I look at my MySpace or whatever, and there's a message from Luke, and I'm like, "What's this?" You know, I look and he explains, like, "Hey, I'm interested in like kind of getting the band back together." And Steve Hurdle, the guitar player who played on Obscura, amazing, amazing, unique player. He actually recommended to Luke me. You know, he made Luke aware of myself, which I have to thank him a lot for. You know, and. Yeah, so Luke just asked, and then he also asked Colin at the same time, you know, so we were both, me and Colin were such big fans, you know, we're like, whoa, crazy, you know, so
that's,
we said yes, you know, so.
Is that all of a sudden the room starts spinning and you're like, I think I'm joining Gorguts? Like, what's
it was pretty weird, you know, it didn't really feel real until we actually started writing stuff together, you know, because then it started to feel more like, okay, we're not just playing old songs, we're like creating new stuff together, you know, so.
Mm. Had you met Steve?
I never got to meet, you know, Steve passed away last year,
true,
which is
yeah.
super, super sad, obviously. And I never got to meet him, but I talked to him a lot online, you know.
Oh, wow.
But never got to meet him. Colin got to meet him, though.
Mm-hmm.
Colin actually made the trip up to go see Negativa, which is Luke and Steve's band from around, like, 2006, 2007.
Yeah,
before we were ever asked to join or anything, Colin, like, went all the way up to Canada to go see them play.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's... And that's so. Did he just knew of your guitar playing? Then Steve, I'm talking.
Steve
about.
Did. Steve always seemed to be super aware of like stuff going on musically, like especially in New York, the whole little sort of like strange music scene, and you know, among a lot of you know, amongst like my friends and I, you know, he seemed to be like aware of all these like sort of smaller. Independent bands and stuff, and is always curious to check out new stuff, you know. So he was aware of Dysrhythmia somehow. So
was he in touch with you before Luke was, or he just?
I don't remember. No, I don't think so.
Mm.
I don't think we actually really talked until afterwards.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's there's a compliment.
Yeah.
Like, ask this guy to be in the band.
Yeah, pretty wild.
Yeah, that is. And so what do you have going on right now with you? I know you've got some studio trips you're making, and what's on deck?
Next thing is, at the just in a couple of weeks, I'll be recording my next solo record, which will be an album of pieces I wrote for baritone ukulele, which I started that about 2 years ago. I just started writing these little 2 to 3 minute little instrumental pieces on ukulele, just kind of for fun, and I would just record them like video, you know.
I've seen the YouTube videos.
I just started putting them on YouTube, you know, as I wrote them, I would just record them quickly and just put them on YouTube, and kind of, you know, people kind of started following them and stuff, and so now I have so many, I have like 24 songs now, you know, so I have to sort of now go through and choose which ones I want to put out for the first recording, but you know, it's going to be a real, you know, stripped down, I want the record to sound like I'm just sitting there on a chair playing in your room kind of thing, you know, so it shouldn't take long to record, you know. I'm hoping I can do it all in a day or two, really.
Oh, wow.
And then after that, Vora is going into the studio to record our second record with Colin Marston, and Profound Lore is going to put that out this time.
Oh, great. Mm-hmm. So you already have that ahead. And then, we did already touch on Gorguts. Yeah, your YouTube... I looked you up on YouTube. I'm like, there's like 20 videos of you playing ukulele.
Yeah.
How did, well, first of all, what instruments do you play?
Just
anything stringed?
I mean, I'm a guitar first and foremost. And then as far as things like ukuleles and mandolins and stuff like that, you know, I can't really say I play those instruments. I just play them like a guitar pretty much. I mean, the ukulele, I play mainly with my fingers, like finger pick style, you know, because I study classical guitar. So the baritone uke in particular, it's a little bit larger than a regular one.
Oh, okay.
And it's strung with lower strings, so it kind of just sounds like a nylon string guitar, but it's small, which is
It doesn't
nice.
Have that Hawaiian blink-a-blink thing going
on.
No,
I don't like, really. Like the baritone sounds much more warm and dark, you know, so.
Well, the baritone sounds more like an instrument. And I hate to say, but the ukulele quite often sounds like a toy.
Yeah, I mean, usually with that, I guess, is more to accompany, you know, singers and stuff. And this is just, I'm writing instrumental pieces for it.
Right, you know, yeah. So. Yeah, and they're amazing, thanks. You know, as well. We have kind of a fun question from a listener. Does Dysrhythmia intend on adding a thrash tambourine?
Thrash tambourine? I know what he's referring to.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Who's that from? What's his name?
Jay Dells.
Yeah. I don't know who that is.
Okay.
He's referring to Longmont Potion Castle. Do you know him?
Oh!
The prank caller?
No, I don't, but okay. I know Longmont,
Colorado? Yeah.
No, I don't know the full story. I just know of their recordings.
Oh, okay.
Potion Castle.
Well, it's just, he's a genius. He's someone we listen to all the time in the van on Dysrhythmia tours. We don't even really listen to music anymore on tour.
Yeah.
We just listen to stuff that makes us laugh, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's Longmont Potion Castle.
That's awesome. And so when did you start playing guitar?
When I was 12. So long time ago.
And did you have any musical education?
Not prior to that, but as soon as I got a guitar, my mom pretty much signed me up for guitar lessons, which I was interested in. I studied pretty much continuously from like age 12 till 21.
Oh, wow.
And then after, you know, so I had a lot of school, you know, schooling and training and whatnot. And then.
So did you have, like, you said for a bit there, you said classical training.
Yeah, yeah.
So did you went to college for guitar?
I went to college actually to study jazz, but then I studied classical privately outside of that.
Mm.
For me, I never wanted to be any kind of one type of guitar player.
Yeah.
I just wanted to kind of study as much as I could various things and then just kind of have them as tools. You know?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I can hear that in your work also, you know, for sure. I mean, it's Dysrhythmia isn't a jazzy band, but you can hear just in the timings and stuff that there had to have been some background of jazz to be able to do what you're doing.
Yeah, and I don't even think that's so much studying the music or going to school. It's more just a listening thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It probably wouldn't even be any different if I didn't go to, you know what I mean? If I didn't go to school and I just kept listening to what I was listening to anyway, it probably would still kind of sound the same.
So what was the biggest benefit or, you know, what did you get from your education then, would you say?
I don't know. I hate to say it, but I really kind of can't. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, it's all a blur. I know that it, of course, made me want to rebel as soon as I got out. I stuck with it and graduated, but as soon as I got out of school for jazz, I immediately started. I mean, it really was I think it was a good thing. It made me want to be like, all right, now I'm going to tune my guitars so I don't know what the hell I'm playing anymore. Like, I got too stuck into like patterns and knowing what note was right over which chord and all that. And I was like, I don't want to.
Too much structure there.
Yeah. Although I like structure and mm-hmm. I'm really, you know, I like composition and I like good form and everything, you know, and music. But yeah, I just wanted to get away from like the, what I saw as cliches because they're what everyone's learning in school. So why would you want to sound like everybody else?
Right. Sure. Yeah. So then forget about school. What was mm-hmm. the first concert you went to and,
Or
that made a difference for you? Maybe.
I was thinking about this the other day. I saw like a show at a VFW hall when I was in seventh grade, like a metal show, just some local mm-hmm. bands, you know, mm-hmm. like cheesy hair metal bands probably or something of the time. And that show had no effect on me, I don't think at all.
Yeah.
A few years later, I went to see Iron Maiden and Anthrax. Mm. And I guess that was ninth grade or something. And that, of course, had a big effect on me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I was already a huge fan. And then, so it was a thrill to see it live. And I even had decent seats at the time, so I still could see, you know. So, probably that show.
Oh, cool. Yeah. And what was the first? Did you grow up as a metal kid, or when did you
definitely
start getting into?
Mm-hmm. Pretty early on, like around third grade and stuff.
Wow!
Because I rode the school bus, and the older kids on the bus would always bring boomboxes on the bus and always be blasting Twisted Sister and Motley Crue and stuff.
Oh, funny!
So I was like, "What's that?" You know. And then, and also at the time, I was growing up in North Jersey, actually, from second grade to end of seventh grade, I was in North Jersey, and this is in the 80s, and I was able to tune into WSOU at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And the 80s was great, and played so much underground metal and stuff, and that's mm-hmm. how I learned about everything and kind of developed my taste and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So what was there one band that really just changed the landscape of the way you looked at music for you?
There's been various ones throughout time.
Mm-hmm. I'll talk about, you know, them and the shifts that it caused for you.
Hmm. Backing way up, you know, to being a really young kid. I mean, everything kind of affects you when you're really young, you know, like first time I heard Twisted Sister, like, it's great, you know, like AC/DC, awesome, Def Leppard, you know, like Dokken, you know. Actually, Dokken was a major one because George Lynch as a guitar player like just blew my mind as like a little kid. You know, he still does, actually. I still think his playing's great. And Yngwie Malmsteen and all that stuff, you know, it's like that kind of blows your mind when you're a little kid, all that fast playing and everything. And also, I liked the sort of darkness, the mood, you know, of his playing, all that harmonic minor stuff, you know.
Mm.
Even from a young age, I always knew I wanted to write kind of dark music, you know. but then as I got older, the most major band was definitely Voivod, you know, because of Piggy's guitar playing was unlike anything I ever heard. You know, I just had no idea what he was playing. It was just totally, I didn't even like it at first. That's the thing about a lot of my favorite music now is I didn't like it the first time I heard it. It didn't make any sense, but also it was that intrigued me in some weird way. And then eventually it did make sense.
Good that you were, that was a time where you didn't discard records, kind of like you listen. Like now, I feel there's so much music out now.
Yeah, you hear
something,
for
2 seconds.
You're
like, okay, I hate that band,
next.
Whatever.
Yeah,
but
no, you couldn't do that back then.
Yeah, especially in the. I mean, what was the first Voivod record that you heard?
The first time I ever heard Voivod, I guess, was actually from Headbangers Ball, seeing the video for Psychic Vacuum.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And that video is awesome, you know. But even still, I guess it was just too bizarre and atonal for me as a little kid being into like all this melodic stuff, you know, at the time. So really, I guess the first like time I properly like listened to a Voivod record was Nothing Face, you know, which was really different for them even at the time it came out because it was so much less metallic than the past and thrashy than those past records. You know?
Yeah.
Nothing Face was the one I listened to all the way through first and then wasn't so sure about and then just kept listening. And then I was like, then it just totally sucked me in.
Right.
Yeah.
The Voivod experience.
Yes.
Wow. And is there anybody out there that if you met them, you would completely like lose your cool and be a raging fan? Because you're a very calm person.
I mean, I used to be, you know, when I used to go see bands in high school, I used to totally be that nerd, you know, that would like wait around afterwards, or, you know, if I saw them walking around before the show, like want to go up and at least say hi. I don't know. I guess I wasn't that bad. You know, I still like kept my distance, but I used to be interested in having things signed, you know, when I was in high school and I'd go see bands and stuff. And usually these were bands that were kind of small anyway, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. These days it's I don't really get, you know, it just seems so almost normal now just to kind of get to meet like a lot of people you grew up listening to, you know.
Right.
Not like it happens every day, but, you know, it has been happening more and more in the past couple of years. But I don't know. I think if I met like Iron Maiden, you know, I've never met them. I think if I met any of those guys, I'd be pretty like psyched. I'd want my picture taken with them at least.
Okay.
Yeah. Because yeah. That's just, I mean.
It's like the fan comes out.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah. I'm still like, even when I meet, you know, I'm still, you know, it's just a matter of how much I express on the outside, I guess. Yeah.
Right.
If I saw Iron Maiden or you know, Priest or any of those guys, like I'd probably get a little bit like nervous or something, maybe.
Because everybody has their sort of the degree of fan.
You also know that those guys probably get bothered all the time, you know, so you don't want to be that guy. I had a funny experience with Steve Buscemi, the actor.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because I'm actually more starstruck by when I see, like, actors that I really like than musicians
days.
Because I'm not in the world of film and stuff, so I guess that seems more like, whoa, that person's real, you know, whatever. And I saw him at a Swan show at the Masonic Temple.
Really?
Yeah, a couple years ago, whenever that was, 2010 or something.
Wow.
And, I saw him and a friend of mine was there with a camera, and I was like, oh, man, I really want to talk to Steve and, like, have my picture taken with him. So I never do that, you know. So I went up to Steve, and I was like, man, I never do this, but, like, I love your work, you know. Can we just get a picture? And just like he is in his movies, he had that same, like, kind of whiny voice, and he's just like, he didn't want to. He's just like, oh, do we have to? He's like, can't we just shake hands and keep this a nice memory instead? So I just shook his hand, and that was that.
So he didn't take the picture.
No, he didn't want his picture taken.
Oh my god! Oh, how funny.
Maybe the Swans just bummed him out, you know. So it was after the show, you know.
And say that he was in attendance.
Yeah, you kind of never think about maybe what actors like listen to, and you know, Jim Carrey's a big Cannibal Corpse fan. I always thought that was cool.
You know? Oh right, yeah. Here and there, and like, you know, every so often there's somebody at like a WFMU record fair where like, oh my God, Holly Hunter is here walking around, like just, you know, sort of odd things like that.
Yeah,
and I saw Bjork at a Cannibal Corpse show once.
I saw Bjork at a Nile show, Cryptopsy show. Yeah.
Yeah, I went up to her and I asked her, I was just like, are you a fan of the band? Mm-hmm. And she was with a group of people and she was just like, I like everything extreme.
That's great.
I was like, that's perfect. She was wearing a kimono.
Yeah. You know. I didn't talk to her. I was standing right, I was waiting for a beer at the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And then I turned to my right and I see her and I'm like, whoa. Okay, she's one person, I guess, besides Iron Maiden. Maybe I'd be a little bit. Actually, I was so nervous I didn't say anything to her, you know. It's one of those things where it's like, I'm not going to bother. It was kind of funny because, you know, being that it was a death metal show, nobody was really bothering her, you know.
Yeah.
Nobody was really interested in talking to her.
Probably. And probably half the people didn't know who she was.
Yeah.
You know, my filter sometimes goes away when I see somebody I'm really excited about. And I've a lot of times alienated myself because I'm like, oh, my God, you're great. And people are like, get this girl away from me. You know. But just in terms of looking at that, is there a person in your life, either related to you or like a mentor, teacher person who would say had like who has the biggest impact on your musical journey?
I have to say my mother, because you know, she bought me my first guitar, and plus she plays guitar also. So there was already a guitar around the house, which is so I have to give her some credit for at least, you know, having a guitar, and my dad for buying it for her.
Mm-hmm. What kind of guitar does she play?
It's a Robertson classical guitar.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know much about that brand, but anyway, you know, it was a guitar and it made noise. So even before I had a guitar of my own, I would sort of pick that up and sort of just strum the strings openly just to hear it make a sound, you know. So that was, you know, I guess first and foremost I have to say.
Well, and then she got you guitar lessons too, right?
Yeah, so, yeah. And both my parents have always been really supportive with what I've been doing. You know, even if they don't always understand why I'm doing it. But
and when you started to be in bands, was your house the rehearsal house or?
Sometimes. Sometimes we would split it up. I had like a metal band in high school. I felt like most of the time we actually played at the other guitar player's house.
What was the name of your metal band?
The Fifth Season.
The Fifth Season? Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Which we stole. It's a song title from another prog metal band called Heir Apparent.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
I guess we just thought it sounded cool or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, and I would have to give the guitar player Chris Ladd in that band a lot of credit too for developing me as a player.
Oh, wow.
Because he was a couple years older. He was like the big high school shredder guitar god, you know, of my school. And here I am, like a freshman at the time, and he's like a junior or something, and he like let me join a band with him, you know, and like taught me how to like pick better and all that stuff, you know. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Then we heard Voivod, Macro Solutions to Mega Problems. Classic.
And you and Dan Mongrain share activity in Gorguts.
Yeah, he was the guitar player before me.
Yeah.
Playing his solos is really hard live when we have to do songs from that record.
Really?
Yeah. I actually don't even try to play them note for note. Mm-hmm. I just sort of play them and then change a few things.
You just sort of play them. Well, that's a testimony, though, to who he is as a guitar player.
Yeah, he's great.
And in terms of stepping into that role of taking over for Piggy, or I didn't even like to say it that way, like taking over for Piggy, but helping Voivod continue.
Yeah.
You know.
He's the perfect guy for it.
He really is. Mm. Yeah. But I think that's really amazing that you guys are both sort of members. Have you ever spoken to him?
Yeah, I introduced myself to him when I saw him play with Voivod when they played with Creator a couple years ago here in New York.
Oh, yeah, at the Nokia.
Yeah, yep, and then... Yep.
That's the first time I saw him play with them, too.
Yeah, I guess that was probably their first U.S. tour or whatever with him in the band. And then, a year after that, a few years ago, Gorguts played this really awesome metal fest in Montreal called Heavy MTL. And we played, and I had no idea, and I'm glad I didn't have any idea, until our set was over, that Dan was, like, standing right in front, like, watching us play, like, right in front of me. After our set, Luke reintroduced me to him again, and, you know, I just said hello and stuff.
Did he say anything about you not playing his solos?
No. He might have been thinking it, but
he probably would have been. I think that's awesome. So the listenership thanks you for playing Voivod.
Of course.
Yes. You know, half the time the guests that I have on do end up choosing to play some Voivod. Mm-hmm. So, and I did want to ask you about the newest Dysrhythmia, because you had mentioned that the writing process for you is going to be a little bit different now.
Yeah. With that band, with every record, we sort of, how can I explain it? We have a way of writing, you know, that works, and we've been playing together so long at this point, we really know each other as players and stuff, and that's certainly not a bad thing. But for this next one, I was really happy with our last record, but with the next one, I really wanted to kind of switch it up a bit. Like, not that we're going to be drastically changing our style or sound so much, but I wanted to try something different with the writing process. So, I've started writing a few songs just on my own where I'm programming drum parts from scratch, just kind of coming up with some interesting rhythms or really fast beats or like stuff I don't even know, you know, at first if it's going to even be playable, you know, by human and stuff. And then try to write riffs to that, you know.
Oh, neat.
And I'm also writing all the guitar parts with a 12-string electric this time, because I really just love the sound of that, and I don't hear it used that much, especially in metal. So I think it'll be an interesting... It'll be an interesting characteristic to the next record, and guitar-wise, sound-wise, and stuff, using a 12-string. With every record, we just keep kind of getting more and more moodier, you know, darker and moodier. And, but that doesn't necessarily mean slower, you know. I'm kind of into this thing of like, sad music that's fast kind of thing.
Oh.
So that's kind of the direction we kind of keep kind of pushing forward into more and more.
Neat. Yeah. And then, do you write everything, and then you sort of go to the...
Well, in the past, you know, I'd say I write maybe 70% or something. Like, when I say write, I mean I kind of initiate the idea. I either write the whole song or half a song. It's really been different. Like, it's gone many different ways throughout time. But in general, it's like I kind of start the idea on guitar, and then I present it to the other guys at rehearsal. Like, here's my idea, you know? And usually Jeff, our drummer, likes to jump in right away and sort of learn at least the rhythms and stuff, what's going on, you know, get a basic idea going. Colin, our bass player, likes to work on his own. So usually will work out the drums and guitar first, demo that, then Colin will work on his own time with bass parts, write something, you know, on his own, and then show us that the next time at practice and just kind of go from there. But it's a super collaborative band, you know. Everyone has a lot of input, and everyone in general writes their own parts. Like I was saying with the new stuff, I think some of the drum parts might be a little bit more like written by me this time, but Jeff still, like, he interprets them with totally his own way and stuff.
Right.
And I'm not super strict about this stuff, you know. It's kind of like these are just kind of general feels or interesting rhythms that I like, but he's totally free to experiment.
Well, and does it help you write more of a song if you are programming drums?
I've never done that before, and I'm always just writing guitar riffs on guitar out of thin air, you know, and usually don't have any idea what the drums are going to do.
Right.
And this time it's totally different, like starting with drum ideas, because I can't play drums at all, you know, but I can hear rhythms in my head and stuff. So it's making me write faster too, because I don't know, maybe just because it's like a new way of working, it's more exciting because it's new or something. But
well, it seems as if a full song would develop quicker because you've got some rhythms actually laid down.
Yeah. It's totally different way of writing for me. You know, I guess a lot of people probably write this way, but I've never tried to do it this way before. So
neat.
Could lead to some interesting things. It's still probably a little too soon to tell, but
And what programs, like, what do you record into?
I just got Logic recently, so I've been using the Ultra Beat is like the drum software that comes with that. So
right.
I've just been using that. It doesn't sound great or anything, but it doesn't matter. It's just for demo purposes.
Yeah, that's neat. Mm. And for your other bands, like, do you ever write something thinking it's for dysrhythmia and then go, like, you know, this is actually a four composition?
So, yeah, that's happened a few times, actually, where I usually never sit down and think about, like, now I'm going to write a song for this band.
Right.
I mean, I have been doing that a little bit with dysrhythmia stuff lately, like I said, with the drum programming thing, because I kind of have, like, this concept that I'm trying to work with, you know. But in general, and you know, in the past, I'm just playing guitar, and I'm just playing, and then some riff comes out, and I'm like, that's a cool riff. You know, and usually most of the time I can tell right away, this is a riff for this band or that band. But then there's been a few times more recently where I'm like, oh, this riff could be one or the other. But usually with riffs, I can tell when one should be used for a band with vocals and one could probably be a pretty interesting instrumental song.
And would you entertain the possibility of using the same riff in two different bands, in two different songs, and seeing what happens, like almost like a little experiment?
That would be interesting.
You could do a whole, like, project riff.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, oh, you know, and pass it along. I mean, you work with enough different people.
It would be pretty interesting to see the different results that would happen. That is an interesting idea.
Yeah, because collaboration with a band is always, I mean, it's never how you think it's going to come out. I mean,
and that's the exciting thing about working with other people, and the exciting thing for me working with the people that I do work with is, like, I know that, like, when I write this idea on guitar, that it's going to sound totally different when they add their input to it, you know, and that's exciting to me to hear. Because then I can kind of listen more as an outsider, like it's not something I even wrote, you know.
Right, yeah.
I have more of an opinion on, like...
Well, and then the song really becomes a song, and you let it go, as opposed to, like, I've got to play this note right, and you have to do this. And I mean, and there are bands where one person writes everything.
But the purpose to me of playing with other people is to have their creative input and voice in the material, you know, so... Even if I start an idea, sometimes I'll start a song with dysrhythmia, and I'll kind of only get halfway through a song, and then I could keep going and probably finish it myself. But then in the past I'll turn in like a half a song to Colin and be like, how about you write the rest of this? You know, we did that with a song called Sleep Decay, and you can hear it in the song.
Oh, really?
The song starts and ends two completely different ways, but it works. It flows. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was an interesting experiment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's neat just in terms of taking that as an experience in terms of songwriting, and then, you know, like, and you could get as crazy as, like, I'll do the first minute, you do the second minute, I'll do the third minute, and really, you know, just kind of cobble things together. And
yeah, but at the same time, I do like things to have a continuity to them and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
More and more as time goes on, I'm way less into, like, choppy this part, that part kind of stuff, you know. So I feel like as time goes on, but this rhythm actually, even probably still sounds nutty to people. It's actually, if you listen, you can tell that there's a lot more flow to the music now. Like, things just kind of flow a lot more.
The first time I heard you guys, I thought you were frightening. Like, there was just something like, whoa, obviously knowing what was behind it and really hearing it. But there were so many changes and so many I guess, kind of places you went in, I guess, instrumentation and texture. That it was kind of like every song had at least 10 surprises in it, kind of thing. Like, whoa. And I, you know, and, and for me, I'm always like, well, will I listen to this in the car? Will I listen to this when I'm cleaning? I'll listen to this when I'm washing dishes. Like, like, get that done fast. Get that fork over here. Do this. Like, I'm like perfect, like, dishwashing music. Yeah, no, it's just weird. But in terms of, like, touring or performing, writing, recording, what do you have a preference? What do you enjoy the process of more?
I used to like touring more, playing live more. I think now maybe it's about equal or maybe a little bit leaning more towards actually like recording more. Not sure why that is. I get really stressed out in the studio a lot of times too.
But I'm always like it more.
It feels more satisfying when it's done than like finishing a record that you feel really satisfied about is more satisfying than finishing a tour. That having a successful tour is satisfying too, or whatever, or having a fun time. But to me, like going to the studio and creating something from nothing is way more. That's kind of there. It's right. there forever kind of thing, you know. That feels kind of more satisfying to me nowadays. I still love the traveling aspect of touring and getting to go to new places still, you know, and stuff like that.
Yeah, meet new people and
see old friends too. That's become a big part of touring now at this point.
Oh, sure. Yeah, of course. When was the first time you went on tour?
First tour I ever did was in 2000 with Dysrhythmia. That was the first tour.
Wow. Somebody just says, sleeping on floors after age 30 isn't so satisfying.
It's true. You think in your 20s that, like, you'll still think that's cool when you're old and touring, but nah, it starts to feel, I don't know. I mean, if it's a friend's place and the house is nice, I don't mind sleeping on the floor. I can pretty much fall asleep anywhere at this point.
But, yeah.
You know, it's like as you get older, you know, you want to, like, it's more important to kind of try to stay feeling healthy and stuff on tour, so you want to be able to sleep if you want to play a good show and stuff. That's important, you know.
So oh yeah,
there's nothing wrong with getting a cheap motel room, you know, these days to us, you know, if we have to.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you, because you've got the new Vora, the new Dysrhythmia, and then your solo records, what labels are all of those on?
The Vora will come out on Profound Lore, which is what Dysrhythmia is on now too. Gorguts will be on Season of Mist. My solo stuff, I've been putting out myself through a label called Night Float, which is just me. And
is there anybody else on that label?
No, I kind of just started for myself. It's not really a label, you know. I mean, it's kind of
it's a label.
It's a name that I put on the CDs that I press. But and actually, the last couple of releases have been just straight to like Bandcamp, pretty much just digital releases.
Oh, and you know, we should mention your Bandcamp page, which is kevinhufnagel.bandcamp.com. Kevin's Instagram is k_Hufnagel, and he now also hosts kevinhufnagel.com. His Bandcamp is still intact. Well, what do you look at to try to find new music or to find out what's going on? What's your go-to websites or...
There's good websites now here, like Brooklyn Vegan, I guess, and stuff. You know, I look at that site because it's, you know, they always have, like,
they have
what's going on every day, you know,
yeah, they do.
Calendar of events or whatever. I usually find out about shows through that. Usually just from friends, you know, really, actually. Just friends that are into the same music that tell me about something coming up. You know.
Cool. Are you still a fan of mystical?
That word kind of summarizes, though, what I'm trying to do with my own music a lot of times, I feel like these days, just have a really weird, a mysterious sound to it, you know, like where it's not like, I don't know, like where the emotion is more just like, could go either way. Is this like uplifting? Is this depressing? Like, what is this, you know?
So if you're trying to create an atmosphere with music, how do you write that? I would think that that's where some of your training comes in, because you kind of know about, like, harmonics.
I have certain techniques, I guess, that I use a lot in my writing. And you say harmonics, and that's a key word.
Okay.
I tend to write a lot with with harmonics, you know. For people that don't play guitar, you know, it's the... It's a bell-like sound, you know, and you can make notes ring together and clusters and stuff. And to me, I just love that sound. And I tend to write a lot of music with that.
Oh, neat.
with those in the music and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, because really, I mean, if you take songwriting, you know, and even in your bands, it's like it seems as if like in Vora the vocals are another instrument as opposed to like, oh yeah, we've got a singer and he's going to write a bunch of lyrics and then we're gonna, and even the way it's mixed, I mean the lyrics are not really like super upfront.
Yeah, like, that's an interesting thing about that first Vora album. The lyrics are actually really great, like our singer writes really interesting lyrics, and he had there's a whole concept with the album and everything, and so it was kind of funny to me that he didn't actually really want anything to be too understood.
Wow.
The vocals are pretty pushed back, and he also even kind of like the way he enunciates is a little bit like blurry too. But yeah, but you're right. Yeah, but we still thought musically it still sounded better when the vocals are a little bit more part of the whole rather than up front and center, you know.
Yeah, and is that an approach like to start with Vora, or was it just in the mix you just decided that's how it would be?
I think we knew that before we went into the studio. And I think maybe the next one that we do, maybe the vocals might be a little bit more up front this time.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want it to sound like the last record. So that might be a way to not make it sound like the last record.
Right.
But also I think lyrically it might be a little bit more straightforward and stuff too. I can't say too much about that because I don't write any words or anything for that band. But
right. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. What's your experience of selling music on Bandcamp?
I think it's a great way to do it if you're an independent artist these days. Because, you know, unlike selling things through iTunes and stuff, you know, they take a percentage, but it's not quite as great. You still make a little bit more as an artist when people purchase things. Yeah, and you know, you can price things for cheaply and then put more as an option.
Mm-hmm.
And people more often than not will pay more to be generous, you know, and help be supportive. So that's great, you know. And people still do that.
And that's really interesting in terms of a concept that if you, you know, whatever, you make something $5 and somebody gives you more.
Yeah, I mean, I think with, you know, these are for digital downloads, you know, and I feel like with digital downloads, there's no reason for them to be very expensive because,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, it might cost, you know, definitely cost money to record, to go into the studio and record, but you're not having to press anything or pay to send out a CD or a record, so.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty much like you've got the product and it went from however you recorded it to inside your computer and that's sort of how it gets distributed.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. So I think it's better to kind of make digital downloads on the cheap side, you know, just so people, I just want people to hear it, you know, and just have it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very neat. And then, let's see, before the Chameleons, we heard Anacrusis.
Yeah.
And, why did you put that song on your playlist?
Another important band for me, really, in a lot of ways. Definitely a band that, you know, not to get all emo and stuff, but definitely they were one of those bands, I guess, like in the way that like old punkers had their punk music when they were angry.
Mm-hmm.
They were the band I had in high school for me, actually, when I was feeling super alienated or something's wrong with me. Like I'd put on Anacrusis because they're not only was the music kind of psychotic sounding and stuff. But lyrically, they were pretty, they didn't write like other metal bands or thrash bands, especially. The lyrics were way more introspective and stuff, which I always thought was cool, you know.
Yeah.
And they always had an interesting, like, I just loved how their bass player always, he was very loud in the mix, and he always played with lots of chorus and stuff. It was like, they always had influence, and then that song we heard was a New Model Army cover, so they were like a thrash band that had all these other just, like, outside influences that were really unique for the time and everything, so... Pretty influential on me, like especially with this rhythmless music, actually.
And then before that was Fate's Warning, and you had mentioned that there's a sort of a Sabbath Assembly Fate's Warning connection.
Yeah, going back to Sabbath Assembly, I just recorded all the guitars for their upcoming release, and while we were doing that, Dave Nuss from Sabbath Assembly and I were, you know, talking about music we grew up with. We discovered we both really love those early Fate's Warning records, so there's definitely some. Influence on the upcoming Sabbath Assembly record.
And who would have thought?
It's not an obvious thing, you know. Yeah. It's one of those things that, like, it's only obvious to us, you know.
Well, and it's one of those things, though, too. It's like,
but that's the coolest way to be influenced by stuff. Yeah. Is when it's not obvious, you know.
Yeah. And you hear things, and then you wonder, like, you know, some record comes out, and you're like, God, that sounds a lot like Fate's Warning, or some, you know, or not that it sounds a lot like, but you just hear like a little bit, and you wonder if they know that there's that little bit that just sounds like a.
I think sometimes it can be a subconscious thing when you sort of steal something. It's like you don't even realize it, you know.
Right.
Like an actual riff or a melody or something.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what we did, you know. It's just more like guitar-wise how we approached it. It's kind of there's some influence there.
It's there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, the metal Big Four,
mm-hmm.
and put the Big Four in order for you, in terms of what you.
That's tough because when I think about my first time hearing all those bands when I was a kid. I don't know if I had a favorite. I liked them all so much, kind of equally.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't one of these guys that was like Megadeth or Metallica. Like,
right.
I loved them both, you know. Nowadays, I mean, obviously Slayer is the most consistent, best band of all those bands. It's tough. All those bands had so many hit or miss
errors.
Yeah. Especially Metallica, you know, and Megadeth. But, I don't know. I have favorite records by all those bands, and I can't really say what my favorite is. I mean, Slayer is definitely the most consistent and probably the most integrity, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I love Peace Sells But Who's Buying. I think that's like, besides that blues cover on there, the rest of the record is just an awesome thrash record with just interesting, you know, really pretty like. Progressive riffs for its time and stuff, and Master Puppets, you just can't touch that album. It's a 5-star record.
Yeah,
I mean it's perfect.
Yeah,
and Anthrax, I don't know. Spreading the Disease is my favorite Anthrax record. I like the earlier Anthrax records.
Mm-hmm.
Like that one. Yeah, when they were almost more like a traditional metal band, not even so much a thrash band, and definitely before they got into the whole rap thing.
Yeah, that was an interesting period. Yeah. I just wanted to know because sort of like, and especially because they all got together so late in their careers, like the Big Four tour and all that. And it's kind of like,
there's probably
like,
so many egos and stuff in the way, you know.
Yeah.
That much time had to pass, you know, before that could happen.
What should I be saying first? Should I say Dysrhythmia first?
It doesn't matter.
Okay. Okay. Because I, you know, and I know you. I mean, Dysrhythmia played here on FMU years and years and years ago.
Yeah.
So that's sort of. It's like I've watched, like, oh, he's doing something else, and
that's my oldest band of them all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know if one will ever, if something else will, you know, ever
get more popular.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah. But you can never, never tell.
Hmm.
Was there a point when you realized that you were listening for a production, like in your scope as musician, let's say? At what point did you realize there was more to listen to than just the program?
Right.
You know?
I think right away. Because at that time, I think I discovered His Name Is Alive through another group on the same label called This Mortal Coil. They're another group who I listened to a lot when I was in college and stuff, you know. And again, another group that did a lot of cool production techniques on their albums where they just had things mixed super quiet, you know, that you wouldn't hear until like the 10th time you listened to it, you know. And
oh, wow.
I was always intrigued by stuff like that. Yeah, so with His Name Is Alive, I guess I read about them first and stuff, you know, so I was like, oh, I think they're kind of a little bit like this. But His Name Is Alive is a bit more strange than This Mortal Coil is, and way more eclectic. Every album they put out sounds totally different. And also one of the most unpredictable live bands I've ever seen. I've seen them live a couple of times, and they're just,
what are their shows like?
They're just crazy. You just don't know what they're going to do. First of all, whenever they do actually play a song from any of their records, they never play it the same way it is on the album. They'll always just constantly be reinterpreting their own music. And I remember one time seeing them, and they just handed out a bunch of jingle bells to everybody in the crowd, which was probably only like 25 people, and kind of just had everyone just kind of play whatever they wanted the whole time during their set.
Oh, wow.
You know, they're just real, they're just interesting live band.
I'll go
and see them anytime they come around, because it's never, you know, it's always, you just never know what you're going to get.
Oh, neat. And I was going to ask you, how popular are they? Because I have no scope on that.
They've been around for so long now. I think since at least 1990 or something, maybe even sooner before then.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still a super cult band, you know. never, I think they're just too eclectic for to ever catch on in any kind of popular way or anything.
Yeah.
They're just a band that just has a super hardcore cult following.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And
well, and it sounds like it's more, it's obviously more than the music, sort of, so you have to appreciate them on different levels.
The band is kind of just, it's mainly just kind of like this one guy, Warren DeFever, and he likes to lie a lot in interviews and stuff. I think he just constantly likes to, like, throw people off in every way possible. So
wait, have you
he's
been
pretty
lying?
Fascinating.
Have you been lying the whole time? That's something that Kevin has gotten from Warren. Mm. Oh, no. He's lying about everything. Not about the Gore Guts record, though.
Maybe.
And I do want to just, you know, remind the listeners, your site is kevinhufnagel.bandcamp.com.
That's where people can hear my solo recordings, yeah.
And is it just your solo stuff there?
Yeah, just my solos.
I want to thank you very much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having
me. For coming. It's a great time. And, you know, your talent, I mean, it's like you were a monster guitar player. And just in terms of writing, your stuff is so amazing. And you're like this calm guy. You know, it's like it's sort of like I'm like, is Kevin going to explode anytime soon? But you know, you don't. It doesn't seem like it. But you know, thank you for however you process this calm person into the crazy. Well, and you know, and your music has a lot of aspects to it. So
yeah,
I don't want to pigeonhole you. Yeah,
you get it out in the music.
And
first and foremost, the music is the outlet for that.
and if you weren't doing that, what would you be doing as an outlet?
I don't know. I'm interested in so many other things like film and photography and stuff like that, but also cooking. I think maybe I'd probably want to like open a restaurant, something small.
Oh, neat.
If I wasn't playing music. Yeah.
So what's your favorite ingredient? Do you watch all those cooking shows where they go like, you know, a piece of plastic and an Almond Joy bar and some rice and make something out of it?
Yeah, I love that stuff. But I think if I did something, I'd probably want it to be just breakfast and keep the menu like fairly simple. Simple but not simple. I mean, just have a few main things like omelets and home fries, say, but have like 20 different kinds of omelets and 20 different ways of preparing hash browns, so you can mix and match and always come back and get something different. When I'm an old man, I see myself maybe doing something like that in Oregon somewhere or something.
Oh, nice. That's awesome. You know, and there's always, even when you go to a diner, there's not exactly the omelet that you want. It's like, well, that one sounds pretty good.
I am always going to diners and telling them to, like, I'll have this omelet, but without this and with this, you know.
Yeah.
And the home fries are usually always disappointing. So I don't understand why that is.
Do you like them, like, with a little, do you like sort of like the crusty edge, or do you like them?
That's, I guess I should say home fries. Hash browns are the shredded ones.
Oh, right, yeah.
Those are usually always kind of pretty much the same everywhere you go. But home fries can be made a lot of different ways. And I like them pretty, with a lot of flavor and stuff to them. And I feel like so many places just kind of fry up some potatoes and maybe put some salt on it.
Right.
Time not, you know?
Right.
And that's it.
So it's in the seasoning.
Well, yeah, and also I like other ingredients in there too, like onions and peppers and spinach and stuff like that. Cheese.
A new side. Well, so you've got it all mapped out.
Yes. Yeah,
the restaurant at some point. Mm-hmm. And so now, any film that you would love to do a soundtrack for?
That would be something I'd definitely be interested in.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to do doc. I tend to find myself watching. I watch a lot of documentaries, and I tend to find myself usually holding a guitar while I'm watching them on my couch, or whatever, and kind of just writing. I'm not even paying attention, but I'm sort of writing the soundtrack to like what I'm watching.
Yeah.
So I would love to do documentary stuff, especially nature stuff, you know, but also maybe crime stuff too and stuff. I think that would be fun.
Yeah.
You
know. Well, that'll get your mood thing in there, the crime, the dark.
Yeah, you know, I feel like that would be a way for it would feel natural for me to write music like that to a film like that called for something, you know, atmospheric like that. Or, you know, if anyone like David Lynch ever called, of course, I'd be myself available.
Get David Lynch on the phone.
Yeah.
Well, I have no doubt that is something that you would totally be amazing at. So we'll see what happens in the future. And thank you for being part of the resurrection of Gore Guts. However that, you know, kind of works out.
Yeah.
That's a really important band to people in terms of, and you hit the nail on the head, obviously, with the Obscura record and mentioning that. But
yeah, I really am excited for people to finally hear this new stuff we have recorded. You know, I think next year will be the year where we really come back, you know, and tour and stuff, and people will be able to have heard the album by then.
So cool.
I'm really looking forward to that. It's been a long time coming. People have been waiting forever.
So, Kevin Hufnagel, folks, your contributions are huge on many levels. So, thank you. You
know, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for making the time
really
and for being a friend of FMU for a long time. Do you know what year that was that Dysrhythmia played?
I think it was 2002, actually.
So over a decade.
Yeah.
That's great.
And I remember hanging out here until like 4 in the morning. Like,
yeah. Yeah, just
looking at records and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a lot to look at here.
Yeah.
For sure.
Hey, everybody. It's Kevin Hufnagel here. I'm doing this little update for Diane Ferris to be attached to the interview we did on FMU back in 2013. Just giving you some updates on what's happened since then. A lot has happened since then. I won't tell you everything, but geez, yeah. Gorguts put out 2 records since then, Color Sands and Pleiades Dust. Dysrhythmia has put out The Veil of Control and our latest record, Terminal Threshold, since then. I've put out a bunch of solo stuff since then. I have a .com site now, kevinhufnagel.com. You can keep up to date on things there. Yeah, currently, you know, we're all in quarantine. I'm trying not to lose my mind. So one way I've been dealing with that is making musical scores to people's pet videos that they submit to me. At first, I started off just doing cat videos because cats are kind of my favorite. But pretty soon, I had people sending me dogs and goats and turtles and all sorts of things. And that's what I'm working on right now. It's kind of hard to think about band stuff right now when you don't even know when you're going to have band practice again or ever play a show. So this is kind of my way of trying to stay creative and doing something instead of just sitting around all day watching Netflix. And it's been great for, keeping me a little bit more calm and stuff. Thanks for listening. Take care, everybody. Bye.
Thanks, Kevin.
Sure. Thank you.
And thanks to Kevin for the original visit back in 2013, and for the update. Check out his Instagram handle, K_Hufnagel. You can also look at kevinhufnagel.com, and he has a band camp under his name as well. And that concludes another podcast episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. More on the way. I am Diane Kamikaze. Check my Instagram handle is one word, Diane Kamikaze. Kamikaze ends with an E. On Facebook, you can find me as Diane Kamikaze Farris, Rocker for Life and Making a Difference. The full link to my index of shows and podcasts can be found on wfmu.org/playlists/DK. That's a capital D and a capital K. I'm going to be working on encore presentations, and I've got years of interviews and podcasts. So if there's something that you'd like to see reposted that you missed, please get in touch. Send me email, diane@wfmu.org. And be sure to subscribe to the show. And if you like it, please rate it and review it. Wow. WFMU. Peer pressure. Thank you. See you next time.